B-Pod Studios.
Thanks for choosing Felger and Maz to entertain and inform you in the afternoon. Felger and Maz. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Grabbed by Coyle in the slot. He pulls it over to the far point, glances up at the video wall at the clock. He'll skate it back into the Bruins zone. And the horn sounds. The Boston Bruins demolish the Carolina Hurricanes in game two. Your final 6-2 Bruins. They get three goals from defensemen, two from Matt Grzelcyk. And for the first time in the playoffs, they win each of the first two games in the series.
It was a Bruins win so resounding. Maybe one of their best games they've played. Maybe the first game in 15, 16 that they played in the postseason that you were able to enjoy as a Bruins fan. Put your feet up. Just enjoy it. No tension. It was so good, though, so resounding, that in true Felger and Maz fashion, we don't like it.
Didn't feel right. Isn't that horrible?
Seriously. Makes me nervous. Makes me nervous if I'm a Bruins fan. It ain't that easy. It's not going to be that easy. And if you or they get lulled into this thing that's how it's going to be, you're going to get drilled.
Yeah, it's a Trojan horse.
Either this round or certainly the next. Because let me tell you, San Jose, and I don't know St. Louis as well, but San Jose is so much better than that Carolina Hurricanes team. It's not even funny. It's not even funny. And there's just something about winning in that fashion, unless you're the Patriots. But certainly in hockey, if you're the Bruins, winning in that fashion, it scares me or it worries me. It ain't going to be that way.
Well, because it lulls you into a false sense that it can be that easy. And it isn't, particularly in the playoffs. It's not that easy during the regular season, for crying out loud, let alone on Mother's Day.
That was silly yesterday.
Oh, my God. It was a joke. Carolina sucked in that game on every level. By the way, do you remember seeing Aho at all?
No, I did not. Nope.
Was he even noticeable on the ice yesterday?
Nope.
Talk about an invisible a-hole. Like, non-existent. Gone. Wiped off the ice. And I, the whole game to me, as I was watching it, saying, 6-0, I don't like this.
And I'm supposed to be the traumatized one. Big Jim Warrior.
Isn't that horrible?
So true.
Welcome I enjoyed to, it. I did.
Welcome back to Felger and Maz.
Yeah.
It's a poop sandwich Monday. They won going away 6-2, and but we don't like it.
It's just,
I'm just telling you, it's
so
it's
perfect.
Like you, but you do. I've seen this, and you know, and I don't know if Carolina is good enough to really make it. You know, if you let your foot off the gas because you're lulled in a false sense of security, I don't know if Carolina is good enough to make it count. I don't know if their goaltending is good enough. I don't know if the way they play defense is good enough. I just don't know if it's good enough. So, you know, you cannot lose this series now. You cannot lose this series. You cannot. Or the season's an epic fail. The whole thing. Okay? I'm sorry. So maybe that motivates you, just, you know, the what if. You can't lose to this team. You're so much better than this team. I think. I mean, at least in certain areas. Defense and in net, primarily. You're so much better than them. So you can't lose a thing. But I don't know. It just, maybe I was used to 15 straight games of pins and needles and every little bounce and every little play and, you know, grinding it out, that I'm just not used to that kind of game. But either way, I don't think that's the way it's going to be. And I think people know that too. And hopefully they know that too. Well, what was encouraging to me is that I heard in the post game, listening to some of the reaction from the players, they said, well, Carolina was down 2-0 in their other series as well. They were down 2-0 to the Capitals, went home and then won that series. Carolina is yet to lose at home. They're 5-0 at home, these Stanley Cup playoffs. They've outscored opponents 22-7 at home. So the players already knew that Carolina had come down from a 2-0 deficit to the Capitals, which not every player plays attention, which tells me they were told this.
Absolutely. It was a point of emphasis in the post-game talk, I'm sure.
So good for Cassidy or Chara or whatever, the messaging there. The players already know that Carolina's been in this spot before and then won whatever that is, you know, 5 of the next 6, whatever they went on a big run there. So the players know. That's a good sign.
Yeah, and my guess is that Cassidy had the same feeling we did yesterday. How could he not? He's standing there on the bench going, This is a joke.
And then in the third period, they're slapping out there. Rask is, you know, throwing it on the stick of, you know, oncoming Hurricanes for easy empty net goals.
And one was, yeah, that second one was gross. So maybe that's when it happened, because I didn't like how it ended. I'm not where you guys are, like, oh, this was terrible. Wow, I'm afraid. Like, I enjoyed yesterday. It was nice to kick my feet up after the first period. We deserved that. But I didn't like how it ended, so maybe with that, Cassidy ripped into him. Said, okay, like, this is kind of how you're going to play at the end here. Don't forget, they came back 0-2.
I guarantee you he did. He's no fool. He knows. You have a game like that, and it can all of a sudden lull you into this idea that, oh, we're going to coast now. And the fact is they're going to get hit hard, especially in the first period of the next game. So the good news is they get some guys that have been through it, and they understand that. But I still think that what you feel and what you say are two different things.
Murray, how do you feel about this Hurricane team?
I just want them to get the hell out of my face. Like, I don't like how they look. Aesthetically, I hate their jerseys. There's only maybe a couple of guys I respect on the team, and it's the a-hole, and you didn't really even see him yesterday. I'm told, who's the defenseman? Oh, watch out for
Slavin.
Yeah, Slavin. Oh, Slavin's going to be a problem. Slavin, he was a disaster yesterday. Enough. Like, fraud team, they should be relegated out of the league, or put them back into Hartford. I hate seeing them. Like, I just want this. I want them to sweep, because I do think that the Bruins need rest. I know guys like Chara said they're better off, you know, not having that much rest, but I think that they need it at this point.
So the Hurricanes, to me, the thing that jumps out is just how much easier it's been than those first two rounds. And I'm not even talking about, you know, you've outscored them 11-3. Is that what it is?
11-4. 5-2 and 6-2.
11-4.
They scored 10 straight goals, Mike.
Okay, so you've outscored them 11-4.
There was 10 straight goals.
There was a stretch where they scored 10 straight. So I'm not just talking about that, the scoreboard, how easy it's been. I'm just about up and down the ice of the room. The time and space the Bruins have gotten in this series versus the first two is staggering. Some of those goals yesterday, I'm sorry. On a couple of those goals, Marcus Johansson could have ordered a ham sandwich on rye with special mustard and waited for the mustard and still made those plays. Look how much room he had on the Gretzky goal. Never mind that it was a sieve. But just how much room he had coming through this high slot on that Gretzky goal. And then on the Clifton goal, he had time to lose the puck, gather the puck, deke with the puck, throw a pass across the ice that got deflected. Then Clifton had time to gather the puck, put it on his forehand, and the net was still wide open. The time and space by that defense and the wretched goaltending there in Carolina is just, I'm not used to seeing it after those first two rounds.
Yeah, it's a bad combination. Again, I just think that there's so much room in front of there. And you know, you talk about the Grizzly goal, that second one. Like, you know, DeBrusk was hammered away there. He scored. Backus scored right in front of the net.
The amount of room that DeBrusk had on that goal was ludicrous.
With the guy, and he kept the guy in his back the whole time. He was hammered away until the puck went in. And again, Krejci and Backus both were there on the Backus goal. And on the Grizzly one where he floats across the front of the net, if he did that against Columbus, he'd have gotten obliterated.
That's right.
Even Toronto was doing a pretty good job in their own zone in front of the goal.
That's right.
Stacking bodies, and they weren't letting you in there. You had to fight for it. This team's letting Matt freaking Grizzly, whom I like and has won me over this postseason, don't get me wrong, but he's a little guy, okay? He's able to just float right through there, no problem, and tuck a backhand home.
Johansson. Look at, I mean, never mind a defenseman sneaking up into the rush. How about a little, you know, not, I don't know how little Johansson is, but he certainly ain't no physical presence. He's not a physical, you know.
Imposing big.
Right.
Yeah.
He's listed as 6'1". He doesn't play that size.
The power play goal he scored in game one?
Yeah.
Just perched at the top of the blue paint, not a care in the world.
Good point.
These last two games, just holding the puck, floating through the high. You get his head taken off.
Oh my gosh,
that was Columbus.
Oh, Columbus could annihilate him. There's no way he'd go in there against Columbus. Or if he did, he wouldn't last. I mean, they'd get him out of there. And we were watching the highlights here a second ago. That Grizzly one, where he just floats right through there and tucks the backhand through. How is he able to float through there? Someone should knock him into next week. All the love in my heart for Grizzly. But that can't happen. That shouldn't happen in the playoffs.
So Carolina did get physical. It's just not in their own end. It's not like a grindy, sort of tight, defensive, physical sort of press. They were hitting you in open ice, which they obviously can do because they did. They brought the lumber in the first 5 minutes of that game. But again, you stood up to it, which I think the Bruins are okay in that spot. Not that they're the biggest team or the most physical team, but if you hit them, I think they're not going to run and hide. They're not going to turtle if you hit them. To me, it's the speed game that gets them. And if Carolina can turn into a speed game like they did in parts of game one, I think the Bruins, that's where they're at the disadvantage. But the physical thing, it was good to see them again. I thought that Ferlin hit on Grzelcyk, the way the Bruins responded, set the tone for the whole game. So there's your Bruins reset. Going up 2-0 down to Carolina after just that thing yesterday was a waltz in the park. That was just a little tiptoe through the tulips, which is not how it should be, and it just makes me nervous.
Oh, yeah, make way for ducklings, as they showed at the beginning of the game. You remember that?
It is not that easy.
Make way for Grzelcyk.
To your phones right after this.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Hey, it's Felger here.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Oh, I like this.
This is Felger and Mass.
Part of me wants to do it just to feel what that feels like.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Sports Hub. Sports Hub. Sports Hub.
Through two plus playoff rounds, it seems as if no matter what type of style of game the opponent wants to play, your team responds. What can you attribute that to?
Talent level of our group. We can skate with anybody. I think when we're on our game and skating, I think we're as good as any skating team in this league. We have physical players sprinkled throughout our lineup that can deliver the hits, and we just talked about Matt Grzelcyk of the world that can bounce back off hits that aren't known as physical guys that can skate smart, but you know, it doesn't bother him. He'll bounce back. That bleeds into whatever game is out there. We're going to play it and hopefully play it well if you're executing. Then it comes down to, can you execute? Are you focused? You know, are you making the plays at the right time? And so skating or physical or both. I think Carolina's both. I think they have a nice blend of that. So do we. So makes for a good matchup.
Cassie's saying they can play any style of game. I don't totally agree. I think they can play a physical game and withstand it and have it not affect them. No problem. I mean, and I'm not telling that they'll necessarily win the physical battle because they're not the biggest team in places. Columbus was bigger than them in a lot of spots and was more physical in a lot of spots and maybe won the physical battle, but it's not going to deter the Bruins. So I don't worry about teams getting physical. When Carolina got physical early in that game yesterday, that doesn't concern me if I'm the Bruins. I do not agree with them that if they have their skating legs, they're among the best skating teams in the league. I don't feel that way at all. I feel some guys are. There's some quickness on that team. But, I mean, some of the most important players are not Blazers. Char is still a prominent piece. He's glacial. Bergeron's not a speed player. Krejci is definitely not a speed player. I think Johansson and Coyle can skate, but they're more possession guys. They play at a more of a deliberate pace, don't you think?
Yeah. Johansson's got some sneaky speed is how I would call it. He's so smooth, I don't think you realize sometimes that he's skating as well as he is.
It's not like it's a speed game.
No. He's not like, you know, he's not going to win the foot race per se.
When Toronto turned on the Jets, there's nothing you could do about it.
But they might be the fastest team in the league. I mean, they're up there.
Yeah, no, they're super, super fast. So that's why I disagree with Cassie. Says we're as fast as they're not. I don't think they are. I don't think they are. So those are the teams that concern me. When he says Carolina is a blend of both, maybe they just suck at both. Maybe they're you know,
caught in the middle.
They're right. They're neither fast nor physical. They can do a little of both. I just think the way they play D in net is just, I don't know how they survived to the conference finals with horrible D in their own zone and wretched goaltending. What should, quickly, before we go to the calls, what should Brindamore do in net?
Oh my gosh, he should make a change. He should have done it at the end of game two. I mean, what I would have done there is put McElhinney in for the third period just to get him some looks against the Bruins. That's all, nothing more. In fact, you tell him ahead of time, I don't care how many goals you give up this period. I'm just putting you in to get some looks, see some shots so that when we put you in game three, we're ready to go. We're not going to win this one.
So maybe the thinking was, though, because I'm with you, it should be McElhinney for game three, and I thought he should have put him in that third period, but with the way the Bruins were going, maybe if he comes in and they get a couple on him, there goes his confidence, and then you got nothing in goal.
Yeah, see, and
so
I,
better off having him go clean in game three, maybe? I don't know.
I played you the sound before. I'll play it again. I don't think there was any forethought to it. I think that Brindamore has a philosophy. He's never changed goalies all season long.
Isn't that unbelievable?
I think the only team in the league, and I don't know if that's according to their team broadcaster. Beers has repeated this a couple times. They have not pulled a goalie for performance all season long. They had to pull Mazarek there in the Washington series because he got hurt. But for performance, he hasn't pulled a goalie all season long. He says that's not how we do it here. He wants guys to battle through it, which, I mean, sounds good on paper. Like, I get it. But it's the playoffs, man. You're the coach. It's your job to do what's best for the team. And at some point, you got to rescue the player from himself. But apparently that's not how they do it. So I don't think there was any forethought to game three. He's just going with his philosophy.
Well, and you also have to rescue the team from the player.
Exactly.
Like, to me, that's the thing I look at and say, so the rest of the team has to pay for it when the goalie sucks?
Okay.
Like, you're doing a disservice to the other 18 guys.
Anyway, back to the phones, as promised. Keith in the car. Go ahead, Keith.
How you doing, guys? I just think this particular matchup is a bad confluence of circumstances for Carolina. They're definitely not a physical team, even though they're trying to be, which I think is their ultimate mistake. They can come out in game three, knock bodies around for the first 10, 15 minutes. If they don't get ahead by five goals, they're going to run out of gas. They don't play defense, period. I mean, Mrazek is the problem because he looks like a polar bear on roller skates, let alone hockey skates in the net. But when DeBrusk is there with two defensemen standing behind him and he's right in front of the net,
right,
the Bruins just have too many opportunities.
Carolina doesn't play defense. They don't play good defense.
Yeah, not hard enough. Yeah.
I mean, the room in there is just, you're right, Beer said it to us before, that there'll be chances in the slot.
Yeah.
Boy, are there.
Yeah, and he said specifically the high slot, which they've also had. I mean, I think the Bruins have been able to deal in that area.
I mean, if you want to get wonky, he said it's because they play man-to-man versus zone. This exists in hockey like other sports. Not that you would know it, but you're in the D zone, you have a man, so you follow him wherever he goes. So if you've got Johansson and he's circling around the circle and you've sort of lost him,
you're chasing.
No one's picking him up, you're chasing him. And he's got all the time in the world to wheel and deal in there. So it's amazing they've gotten to this point. George in the car on Kyrie Irving. Go ahead, George.
Hey, so I'm with Maz. I don't want a competitive team, but honestly, on my Kyrie take, I think that I don't even think he knows what he wants to do yet. Like, granted, this worries me about all this stuff saying that he's 95% going to the Knicks. That worries me. But I honestly think I don't even know the guy himself knows what he wants to do yet.
Well, maybe he doesn't know where he wants to go. But would you be surprised if he knew for damn sure it wasn't here?
No, I wouldn't be surprised at that at all.
Exactly. What if Kyrie said this is...
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task. But after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Felger and Mass.
Ow.
98.5, The Sports Hub.
Yeah, we thought we'd give you a Red Sox minute since there's a certain team in town, Maz, that seems to be playing better.
Oh, yeah. No, they're playing better. No question about it. So why would we play a Sandy Leon highlight? Huh? Why would we play a Sandy Leon highlight from a weekend where you beat the crap out of the Seattle Mariners? Email of the day from Bob. Blah. So this came on early Sunday morning. So, what is your take on this guy now? I know you guys have to talk boring Bruins, but the scapegoat Swifart, still stinks. He was 27 years old. He ain't going to make it, which sucks for him. See, so this is the kind of crap that Red Sox fans want to do now. It's like rub my nose in Sandy Leon, like all of a sudden this is it, because Sandy Leon hit his first home run of the year in a game that they came back from a 4-0 deficit and they won 9-5.
Sorry, that was his first home run of the year?
Correct. Oh, it might have been a second. Doesn't matter.
Continue.
Whatever it was. A Freudian slip. Leon hit a home run. They win the game. They had him trying to bunt earlier in the at-bat, and he fouled it off. Then he hits one out of the ballpark, and this is how everything's going for the Red Sox right now. So I sense that Red Sox fans are starting to get a little cocky because they actually started to play like they're supposed to play. They're 22-19 now, which is good. So let me ask you a question. Have they dug themselves out of the hole?
Not proven yet.
Kinda.
Okay. So Shaughnessy wrote this over the weekend. After everything that happened in the Sox hideously bad first month of a title defense, they will wake up on Sunday four games out of first place. This was in the Sunday column. They're now three out. Shaughnessy continues. After playing as bad as they could possibly play, the Red Sox are right where they need to be to get where they want to go. They still have not even played a quarter of the season and everything is ahead of them. It turns out that the hole they dug was not too deep. End quote. How do we know that? How do we know that it wasn't too deep?
Well, this is why I said not yet, because the way it generally goes, whatever kind of run they're on, they've won 10 of 13 or whatever. I just made that number up. You know, whatever kind of streak they're on, generally the way it goes is you win 10 of 13, then you lose 8 of 13, then you win 7 of 13, then it's sort of.
Right. It ebbs and flows.
Yeah. This is going to ebb. It's going to ebb and flow. And certainly by the All-Star break, maybe it all comes out in the wash, but I think this is, I don't think we know yet if they've dug themselves out.
So look, they're playing better. There's no two ways about it. Of course they're playing better. They're starting pitching's better. They're starting to hit and break games open, all the above. They're playing better. No two ways about it. This notion, though, that they have now erased the bad start is wrong. It's wrong. You don't erase the bad start in May by Mother's Day. You don't. You help mitigate it, but you don't erase it. If they lose the division by two games, you know what we're all going to say? Oh, geez, if they hadn't gotten off to a 6-13 start, they might have won the division. Last year at this time, they were 28-13. They're six games off the pace that they were a year ago. And they didn't pull away in the division until late August a year ago, mid to late August, when they smacked the Yankees around, and that was the end of that. So this idea that somehow they've buried this bad start is flat out wrong. Wrong. They've mitigated it, but they're still chasing. And if they have another slump, we're going to go right back to that bad start.
It's almost like that state-run media over there.
Oh. Very good, Murray. There you go.
Shaughnessy being a part of that?
I look at that and I say, come on. Like, really? Like, all of a sudden now, 22-19, this is where they have to be? Of course it's been better lately. Yes, it's been better lately. They just played one of the teams that's going worse than anybody else in baseball.
Saturday impressed me, though. Were you at least?
Sure, yeah.
That was the one that's like, holy crap, okay. That actually reminded me of what they were last year, because that start by Porcello couldn't have been worse. But he buckles down and saves them having to go deep into the bullpen when they got Velasquez pitching yesterday. And that one was impressive.
Yeah, they hung in there and they came back in the next innings. You know, it took a few innings. But they ended up taking the lead and they pulled away. Again, I'll give you all of that. I just think that, and they're beating bad teams. And even that, I don't rub their noses in, because I look at it and say, well, you're going to be playing a lot of bad teams. They get Houston next weekend, so that'll be a good test. But nonetheless, they are playing better. There were no two ways about that. I'm not disputing that. But this idea that they're out of the hole, how do you know that? How could you possibly know that? If they lose four of the next five, they're right back in it again. Like, I just, this idea that all of a sudden it all goes away, oh, I hate that.
Does that disappoint you with Dan, of all people?
Yes. Like, I wonder who got into his cornflakes. What someone put in his breakfast this week? Shaughnessy, of all people, love it's okay. It's all good. No problem. The bad start's erased. No, it isn't. It's not erased. It's not over yet. They still have to. The other thing is they're not fully in control of their own destiny yet. Dig yourselves all the way out. This thing could haunt them all year long. It doesn't go away like that. I'm sorry. I hate to be the wet noodle. But nonetheless, it does not go away like that.
Real quick, give me a minute on the president taking credit for it. How did he say it? Can we do it, Murray?
Has anyone noticed the streak they've been on? It's the orange touch. Kind of like the Midas touch. I can't really do the impersonation all that good.
The Los Angeles Dodgers, Tampa Bay Rays, the Yankees are losers. They're losers. The Red Sox are winners. They haven't lost since they left the White House.
I am no fan, but this is pretty entertaining.
He did tweet something like that today.
Oh my God, it's unbelievable. Like, Trump's going to take credit for this. He can't get the wall up, but he's going to take credit for the... He's going to take credit for the Red Sox.
Here it is. Has anyone noticed that all the Boston
Red
Sox...
Come on, do it right.
Has anyone noticed that all the Boston Red Sox have done is win since coming to the White House? Others have also done very well. The White House visit is becoming the opposite of being on the cover of Sports Illustrated, by the way. The Boston players were great guys. He always likes to overemphasize certain words. But yes, he's got they got the Trump touch. That's why they've turned things around.
You sound like the guy who runs the power plant in The Simpsons. What's his name? The boss.
Oh, Smithers. Yeah.
Can we do this on the podcast, please?
Yeah. It's not Smithers. It's
Mr. Burns.
Mr. Burns.
Smithers is the neighbor.
Yeah.
The assistant.
The Yankees, the Rays are losers.
Do you think there's anything to getting over that thing and that was affecting him? The White House visit.
No. No, I don't. I don't at all. Because, again, they came out of the season with their heads up their asses. No, they played like garbage. They weren't ready to start the year. I don't think they were sitting there saying, oh, my God, that White House visit is coming. Half of us are going, half of us aren't.
I got their heads out of their asses.
Seriously. So, look, I mean, was there some storm around it a little bit? Yes, and you and I talked about this off the air. I give the Red Sox credit that clearly they're not sitting in their clubhouse talking politics and over who's going and who's not, because, I mean, you know, unless you were colorblind, it was pretty obvious what the heck was going on there in terms of who went and who didn't.
Doesn't impact them, doesn't?
No, they play ball. Like, I give them credit for that, and I think that's part of the reason, you know, they were able to, you know, play better here and start to get on the road back.
Okay, speaking of the podcast, me and Ty Anderson on the off-air show, Facebook Live, Twitch, tonight, 6 p.m. sharp. Me and Ty Anderson, more Bruins coverage, which you'll get next as well. Continue with your calls. You want to mix in the Red Sox, by all means. Otherwise, the Kyrie LeBron NBA drama and the Bees with your calls right after this.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Hey.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
B.O.B. Boob.
Oh, my God. Isn't that Bob?
It's Felger and Mass, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Here's the quote, Jeff Goodman of Stadium reporting a Celtics player telling him, quote, he's hard to play with, it's all about him.
I don't know if he's all about him, but he's definitely hard to play with. He's definitely a personality that is difficult to learn how to be with. The irony is, one of the reasons why he went to the Celtics, one of the reasons why he wanted to leave Cleveland, was because LeBron was like this, very difficult to play with. As we go on here, I see this. I really honestly believe that Kyrie and LeBron, the way things are going, kind of need each other. And both of their situations are sort of deteriorating. Both of their options are getting a little bit narrower. I really think that the Lakers should make a hard move for Kyrie Irving in this offseason. And even though you would never think that they could play together again, I think that this season especially, the best laid plans of mice and men and free agents and Kyrie and LeBron leaving Cleveland. And frankly, Ty Lue and Kyrie did not leave it on good terms. And okay. If it's a different coach right. with the Lakers, especially if it's Jay Kidd, let's point out that Kyrie grew up in New Jersey. Jay Kidd was starring. He has a great respect for Jay Kidd. He's a point guard whisperer. If the Lakers go with Jason Kidd, that's potentially even more attractive to Kyrie Irving. So I honestly believe that Kyrie is difficult to project, but the way this season has ended, I would definitely be calling him on July 1st.
Ask me July 1st.
I think Jim already put that together over the weekend. Stephen A. Smith has since poo-pooed Kyrie and LeBron. But again, if you listen to Felger and Maz, if you listen to Jimmy Stewart, you were ahead of the game because Jimmy Stewart had this late last week. He had this late last week. Now, he didn't have it actually come to fruition, but just that Kyrie reached out and called LeBron shortly after they were eliminated by the Bucks last week. So you've had this information here on Felger and Maz. Windhorse and anyone else followed up from Jimmy Stewart's reports. And so that happened. Now, is it likely that they're going to get together? Who knows? Stephen A. Smith, again, today poo-pooed that. Here's Stephen A. Smith today on First Take.
Stephen A.,
Would Kyrie going to the Lakers be a good move?
I guess it would be a good move, but from what I'm told, it's not going to happen. I got a text message from folks close to Kyrie's family within the hour as we were teasing the subject. Quote, there is no way in hell he's going to L.A. I don't give a damn what anybody says. Knock that down for us right now, please. He ain't going to L.A. That's what they say. I would tell you that if he ended up in L.A. with LeBron, it would be formidable. I think it would make them Final Four in the Western Conference. They'd make, meaning they'd get at the very least to the conference semifinals. I don't think there's any question about that. But from everything that I've been hearing over the last few days.
Okay, so Kyrie, stop it there. So, Kyrie, LeBron in L.A.? No. It's been told by members of Kyrie Irving's circle, shoot that down right now, not happening. Which leads you to believe the rumors first came from LeBron's circle.
Mm-hmm.
Fine. LeBron's, you know, fishing. Certainly fishing. Has been fishing for a while. I think that's obvious. All right, Stephen A. So where is Kyrie Irving going?
Well, from everything that I've been hearing over the last few days, Kyrie Irving's heading to New York City. Kyrie Irving is heading to Madison Square Garden with Kevin Durant.
I like it.
His, you know, people in his inner circle are trying to bring the Nets into the mix. But clearly New York is the destination. The likelihood is that it will be MSG and obviously Max. And I'm just, I will admit, I'm saying this for your entertainment, Max Kellerman, because I know it's going to get you going after I say this. I am told that James Dolan himself has basically said, whatever the hell you want, I will move the hell out of the way. I will give you whatever you want. It doesn't matter. Okay, I said, I'll take care of you. To the Kyries and the Kevin Durants of the world.
Okay, so just your reaction, both of you.
So, do I believe that Kyrie is leaving Boston in all probability? Yes. And New York is as logical a place as any. Let me just rewind, though, to the whole Windhorse thing to L.A. I don't believe that. I think that is coming from LeBron's side, as you noted. And just think about the way Windhorse said that report. Both LeBron and Kyrie, and I'm paraphrasing a little, but he said something effective, are running out of options. What options is Kyrie running out of? LeBron's under contract. He can't leave. Kyrie's a free agent. He could re-sign here. He can go to New York. He can go to Brooklyn. He can go wherever the hell he wants, in fact. He can go to any team in the league that has the money to sign him. Kyrie isn't running out of options.
Well, I don't know. After this whole act, how many teams out there would want to
All of them.
A lot.
You know, those that are desperate, the ones in New York.
I mean, as I've told you, it's wrong. People should be leery of Kyrie Irving right now.
I think some might be.
You do?
I do. I mean, this was awful. This was absolutely awful.
Let me ask you this. If New Orleans said, you know, to Anthony Davis, if we bring Kyrie here, would you stay? Would they both stay?
I don't know.
I bet you they
feel
would.
Like, I mean, with the way that it ended with Davis, don't feel like it down there. Okay, I don't know.
Well, I bet you they would. My point is this, that Kyrie can do whatever he wants. Even if it's not the other 29 or 31 or whatever the hell it is in the league. There's 10? How many? I mean, he's got plenty of options. Kyrie's got plenty of options.
And just quick,
so that's why I don't believe that story.
And for me, just quickly, I don't necessarily believe that the L.A. stuff is strictly coming from LeBron James. Kyrie Irving has proven himself to be a duplicitous snake, considering that he stood in front of the season ticket holders before the season started and said, oh, yeah, no, I'll be back. We all know how it played out. So I think he also wants this out there so he doesn't piss off Kevin Durant, and he's trying to, you know, play both sides here. Let's see how those ping pong balls drop tomorrow night, because if the Lakers end up with the number one pick in Zion, isn't that a hell of a lot more attractive to Kyrie Irving?
So in other words, he calls LeBron, what do you think? Want to get back together? And then publicly, or he has his people reach out to the media, say, no, it's not true. So he's playing LeBron on one hand, and he's trying to appease Kevin Durant on the other. I like it, Murray.
I'll buy that.
How about the whole Jason Kidd thing? Important for Kyrie Irving. Now, Jay Kidd goes there as an assistant coach. You read Gary Washburn over the weekend?
Yes, I did read Washburn over the weekend.
How Stevens has to have a strong assistant because the staff last year couldn't handle the players?
Yes.
Washburn wrote that it became apparent throughout the season that there were major, no kidding, that there was major friction among Celtics players because of some of the understandable personal agendas and how playing time and roles were distributed. It wasn't that the coaching staff was unaware of these issues, according to team sources. It was that they really didn't know what to do about it. Without a coach with any real influence on players such as Irving, or who commanded the reverence of younger players, the staff was essentially left helpless to cure the problems. Stevens, who has allowed the players to police themselves in the past, swooped in too late to solve the issues. Some players blamed him for integrating Hayward, Gordon Hayward, into the starting lineup without giving regard to the feelings of Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. The feelers. Now we're worried about the feelings of the young kids. In fact, Washburn goes so far as to say the Celtics lost a lot when Walter McCarty decided to take the Evansville University job after last season. He was a calming influence, and believe it or not, the players recognized him not only from his 10-year NBA career, and this is where I had to put the paper down, not just from his 10-year NBA career, but for his role in the movie He Got Game.
Oh, God. It's so perfect.
There's sometime that league is just, it's just too much for me. So now we need a babysitter for the players who's played in the league or has been in a movie. What role was he in He Got Game?
No idea.
I missed this one.
Me too.
So the players
clearly that means Ray Allen would be a fantastic coach.
Clearly then. Wasn't about him, though.
So it's like,
because he had nothing.
Yeah. Oh, you played in the league? 10 years? Cool, man. You lottery pick? I don't remember you, but you're cool in that movie. Yeah, I'm glad you're an assistant coach. I'll listen to you. You got to be freaking kidding me. You got to be freaking kidding me. But this is what the league's becoming. So now Stevens, you know, as Washburn writes, president of basketball operations Danny Ainge should be held responsible as well. He has surrounded himself with longtime friends and analytics people who know the game, but their strength isn't necessarily people skills. They don't have enough babysitters there. What happened this year was a disaster, and it would have been avoided and avoidable if it was detected early enough. But no one on the coaching staff felt the empowerment to really deal with high-priced, big personality players such as Irving, who respected the staff but wasn't exactly going to listen to a third assistant's advice on how to cope in the NBA. So we heard Kyrie say that a couple times when that Clippers game, he says it's so great to, you know, those guys get to play for a coach who's won in the league and played in the league and blah, blah, blah. This is important to these guys, that you have to have someone who's played in the league, at least on the staff. And that Stevens was unable, helpless, to reach Kyrie Irving and those other players. Is that an indictment on Stevens, the modern NBA, or what? So now we got to get in guys. So we got to bring in guys who...
You need muscle, basically.
How about all the above?
Guys who've been in Spike Lee movies? Was that a Spike Lee movie?
It was, yes. Yeah.
Was he got? So we got guys who've worked with Spike for the players to listen?
Or an intimidator like Kendrick Perkins.
And act like professionals? It's like, oh my God, a bunch of children, a daycare over there. But anyway, so Jay Kidd goes to the Lakers. Is that for Kyrie? Because he needs someone who played in the league or was at least in a movie. I don't know. So there's that. There's your Celtics reset. Back to your phones on everything. Celtics, Bruins, little Red Sox action as well. Right after Murray's 90-second update, no commercials.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.